Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to a very, very, very special episode of the Managing Madrid podcast. It is March 20th. Spring is in the air. And you know spring is around the corner when we got a guest like Phil Kitro coming on the show, making his Managing Madrid podcast annual appearance, presenter at La Liga TV, host of the Spanish Football Podcast, reporter over at Optus Sport, and also formerly of Real Madrid TV. I'm a huge fan of the guy. We are very blessed to have him. Phil, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Thanks, man. These intros keep getting better every year. So yeah, next year's one's going to be amazing. Thank you.
Well, now I have to remember that. I gotta rewatch it for next year, make sure I one up it. I don't remember what I said last year, but it was probably something
similar. Just fractionally not quite as good as this year. And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. I'll try to hype it up every year. Look, you guys are like pioneers for all of us who got started in this podcasting thing. Everything you guys do, you know, you're on the game, you're at the games, you're on the ground, you're covering this all in person. I think the last time we spoke was before the World Cup.
Because the last time we did a podcast together,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a while ago. Was I talking about Uruguay?
Uruguay? Definitely talking about Uruguay.
Yes, definitely.
100%, because it was around the time when Fede Valverde was on his big scoring streak, if you remember, before the World Cup.
Yeah, right.
I remember. I even asked you about the odds of, like, what odds we should take heading into the World Cup, because Fede Valverde was, like, one of the lower probabilities to win the Golden Boot. And I was like, should we look at this? Is this something that we want to potentially bet on if you're a betting man? You talked me out of it, and I think all the listeners out of it. And I think that was
a good call. Yeah. I definitely bet on Uruguay to win. I bet on Uruguay to win every tournament they're in. That's the only bet I ever do. I don't gamble, but me and Sid Lowe, who I do the Spanish Football Podcast with, we always have a bet on Uruguay in any international tournament. So Copa America is coming up, so I guess we're going to be sucked in again.
You convince him. You just
he doesn't need much convincing.
Like,
he's got
hard-earned money here.
He's got the same sort of strange Uruguayan fascination as me, so it's pretty easy to convince him. And so that was about a year and a half ago. Okay, I was actually thinking because I was doing a show yesterday at La Liga TV, the Tuesday Tactics show, and we were talking about Valverde and his involvement for Real Madrid this season and how different it's been compared to last season. And we were talking about the goals that he was scoring last season, the position he was in on the pitch, and his importance this season, but not as like headline grabbing. I think it's only one league goal this season, isn't it? And there was all that talk about Ancelotti last season telling him he had to score double figures, or Ancelotti was going to resign or something. I can't remember. And now
if I can't get someone like Fede Valverde to score double digit goals, I should resign, something like that.
Yeah, right. And then now he is... basically, I think he's played the most minutes for Real Madrid, made the most recoveries, ran the most kilometers, and has only scored one goal, but his position on the pitch has been really important. So
right,
yeah. It's
different roles,
and also, you know, I mean, I'm just throwing that in just to show that, you know, the Uruguay obsession does have, like, there's something in it. It's not just, you know, we're not just talking about Uruguay for no reason. Fede Valverde, I guess, like, accelerated that interest in Uruguayan footballers, and he's been quite good to watch this season.
But where does it stem from? I think you mentioned it one time. Where does the actual?
But the Uruguay, like, so the Uruguay. Back,
Yeah. The
Uruguay fascination. I think we definitely talked about this. I'm getting like flashbacks now. So it's just that it is such a small country surrounded by two footballing giants like Brazil and Argentina, and still they managed to compete, and still 3.5 million people, and they managed to produce so many incredible, talented footballers. A bit like, they're like a South American Croatia, I guess, but they've also won the Copa America 15 times, and, you know, Croatia haven't won the Euros that much. So they've been successful, nestled in between two giants, and they're kind of forgotten about. And then just there, I just, like, if you love football, you should be like fascinated by Uruguay, because what they've done is just incredible.
This is mildly related, but just talking about Uruguayan players who played for Real Madrid. So I'm writing a book about Real Madrid, as you may know, and I was researching on Jose Santa Maria, the center back who played for us, 50s, 60s kind of range. And I came across this interview he did, like, well after he retired, like decades after, with Sid Lowe in The Guardian. And it was just like fascinating to read up on him and just the mentality, everything he was saying. It's exactly the kind of stuff that the Real Madrid players say now, like in terms of never say die, like, you know, covering every blade of grass the way Fede does. Like, I'm everywhere. I'm covering all these zones. It was really interesting to read. You recently came back from Bilbao on like a very specific mission, correct?
Yeah, so we went up to Bilbao on Friday to record a special TSFP, the Spanish Football Podcast, about like Athletic Club, but not so much like the footballing stuff, which we've been speaking about all year, but more about like what the club is like as a social entity and how they work and why they are so special, because I'm sure the listeners and viewers will know that they only field Basque players or players that have been born in the Basque country or come through Basque youth academies. And just how they succeed, how they continue to thrive and generate the kind of fervent devotion that they do, because it's a complete anomaly in the world of football, in the money-obsessed business world of football, to have a team that is specifically doing something against its interest, sporting-wise, continue to thrive and to succeed. It's just incredible. So yeah, we went up there, spoke to some people, in the club, a player, spoke to the sporting director, and that episode should be out this week. So yeah, it was it's really great. It's an amazing city as well, just really beautiful, really spectacular, and it is just a one club city. And there's a lot of big one club cities, particularly in the north of Spain, but this is the biggest one by far. And Athletic is everywhere. There's obviously there's flags everywhere, shirts everywhere, stickers on cars everywhere. You can get like Athletic branded shampoo and shower gel. It's just all encompassing in the whole city, and it's just it's pretty special to see.
So I was a huge fan of this. I'm going to bring it up on the screen so people can see the bib, and I don't know what this is. Well, maybe
that's what the bib came in. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. A huge fan. So every baby in Bilbao gets this. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, every single baby that is born in the province of Vizcaya, which is where Bilbao is the capital of the province, every single baby gets this little bib, which says, welcome to this big family. And it's like, that's kind of the idea, because if you are born in Vizcaya or the Basque country, you can play for Athletic. If you are born there, you are part of this family. And the player that I spoke to is Ander Herrera, and he was born in Bilbao, but he is very open. He was born in Bilbao, and then when he was three, he went to Real Zaragoza, and he's like, I'm a Zaragoza fan. Like, I grew up as a Zaragoza fan. They are my team. Mm-hmm. But because he was born there, he can play for Athletic, and he's like, being here, you just get sucked in and drawn in and then just captivated by the special aura about this club. So it's really nice. Like, those little gestures, those little details are how you captivate a whole entire society. And there was another thing as well. They, if like for kids that have been in hospital, they get a little certificate. And it's an athletic club certificate just saying like so-and-so has been a champion, well done for coming through hospital, athletic club is with you, or you know, something like that. And it's just these little details that just show the club is dare I say the phrase, more than a club, is more than just a football club, isn't it? It's it's there in every part of society.
They actually are.
They really are, man. They actually are. So yeah, no, it was great to see.
I mean, that's part of the benefit of being a one city team kind of thing. Because like, let's say if one of the Madrid teams tried to pass those out at the hospitals, I don't know if it would fly, right? Like if Atletico was like, every baby born in Madrid gets this bib.
Yeah, what would happen? That wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. But also like in other cities, like if you go to Malaga or like Cadiz or I don't know, there's like loads of Real Madrid fans there, loads. And
yeah,
they're slightly smaller cities, but they're still, Malaga isn't. And it's just, yeah, there's I know this is the Managing Madrid podcast. I don't think there are any Real Madrid fans in Bilbao at all. It's just, it's a one club city, man, which is pretty, pretty cool, especially in Spain.
Well, in this particular era right now, I don't know if you've taken note of this, but Real Madrid fans really feel an allegiance to Athletic because they've beaten Barcelona twice, I think. And also just the Williams brothers are super fun to root for. Like
they are, man. They are. Yeah. It's one of the best stories in football right now, having these two brothers playing an incredible brand of football, scoring goals, assisting each other. I don't know if you saw, there was a actually really nice, they were caught on camera after the game against Alaves at the weekend, arguing with each other.
Yeah.
And like Lico's going, I was in a position here and he never passed to me. And why didn't you pass to me? And Neko's going, there were two brothers arguing after they'd won the game and they were sitting there arguing. And it was like anyone who's got a brother or a sibling or a cousin or whatever can like relate to that, arguing with your bro. Just this is in a stadium after playing a football match. So yeah, that's a pretty
super relatable.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's like Athletic players laughing in the background at the whole scene. It's quite a scene. So I just like being in Canada here, we get the ESPN feed for La Liga. So we don't get to see you guys on TV. So the only time I see you guys kind of talking or like if clips get posted on social media of the discussions, like I'll see it then, but I don't get to see you guys. So I wish I had Tactics Tuesday, for example, over here.
Yeah, it's a good show, man. I'm not saying that because I present that. We've got good guests and we get like loads of former managers on. And afterwards, they're like, oh, wow, we like this. Yeah, this is cool. This is because this is what managers want. They want to talk about tactics. They don't necessarily want to be like getting drawn into controversial discussions. So, yeah, it's 100%. A shame. If anyone's watching at ESPN... Guys, take us. If anyone's watching at ESPN, it's up to them. You know, take the feed. Take the feed.
Well, they you know, we're all friends with people at ESPN too. But I think they're great. But I think like the Tactics Tuesday is one of the few places left that actually has the sacred conversation about football. You know, because a lot of the dialogue around football is not about football, if you know what I mean, right?
Oh, I do know what you mean, Kian, because I live in Spain and people do not really talk about football here. They just shout at each other about controversial matters that are not like, what was it? I can't remember what it was the other day now. This it all just sort of blends in one another. But yeah, they just like the post-match analysis on the radio, for example, is just not analysis, just shouting at each other. And it's nice to actually... look at numbers, because numbers and stats don't tell you everything, and you can kind of manipulate them to make any kind of argument you want. But at the same time, they are useful in giving you a broad view of overview of what's going on. So it's good to look at those, and it's good to have people who have played the game and manage people explaining what has happened. And that's what like co-commentators are supposed to do, right? In commentary, and then in analysis in the studio, the ex-pros, I guess, are there, and the tactics analysis is supposed to be, why has this happened? Don't just necessarily tell me what's happened. Tell them I can see what's happened. Why has this happened? And that's what we try to do.
I love it. Has there been anything in preparation for those shows recently that like, because I know you bring a lot of like, you have access to some analytics because of your job. Has there anything like analytically, data-wise, caught your eye about Real Madrid recently?
Ah, man, if you'd asked me previously, I would have had a little look. I'm sure there is.
I love catching people off guard. Sorry.
Yeah. Not off the top of my head, to be honest. Okay. Not off the top of my head. No. I can't claim that. But no. Let me have a little look while we're talking. Keep talking, because
okay, cool. Well, the thing, like, I see them sometimes because you post them on Twitter sometimes.
Yeah.
So I know you have access to some stuff, and you kind of post the things that catch your eye. That's why I asked, and I thought maybe you had some.
Well, there was the thing that I think this weekend was the first time that Real Madrid had conceded from a set piece against Osasuna. They hadn't conceded from a set piece all season. Apart from, well, they conceded a penalty against Rayo, and that is technically classified as a set piece, which right. I do not like at all, because it's obviously not a set piece, is it? It's a penalty. It's completely different. But on the little analytics thing, it says that they've conceded two, and they've only conceded from one, which I thought was interesting, and something that they're clearly working on a lot. And, you know, to have been defensively solid from set pieces, missing your number one goalkeeper, your number one centre back, and possibly your number two centre back, or number three centre back at least, anyway, is it's pretty good going. Yeah.
Personally, I think it's a bit of a miracle that we have only conceded one set piece goal. Like, because like we look at it, we're like, man, there's a wide open header for X player like 10 times a game, and it's like, I don't know how. Like, Lunin obviously has a big part to do with that too, but I think we were due finally for that. So Phil, before the podcast, I announced that you guys were coming on to our members, you guys, you. But a lot of people who listen to our podcast, and I would almost dare say most, possibly all, also listen to your podcast, TSFP. And so they were very excited that you were coming on. They love these collabs, and they love kind of seeing us chat. And I asked them to send questions if you have any. And that's kind of one of the perks of being a member, is you get to ask questions. And well, I went through and I filtered out, I think, three or four.
Three.
So I'm going to pop them up.
I've just had a look at the statistics.
Okay.
And here's an interesting one. Real Madrid have conceded 60% of their goals in the first half, which is the highest percentage of any team in the division.
Okay.
Which is interesting, is it? It's not like the highest number. Yeah, right. I mean, they're still top. So obviously we know that Real Madrid come back in the second half, but 60% of their goals in the first half is interesting.
It's funny to see it that way. Yeah. And you can easily think back and note all the bad performances we've had in first halves, and often well into the second half, and then save it for like minute 75 to kind of wake up.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
So this question is from Pranay Khubchandani. I hope I got that right. What are the top three stadiums in Spain that have the best atmosphere?
Okay. I would say that I have been to and experienced in terms of atmosphere. It depends what you're looking for in terms of best. But I would say the Metropolitano is best. I know this is Manager Madrid. Very, very loud. I think it might be the loudest stadium in Spain, because they make a lot of noise in the acoustics in the arena. It's loud. I think the atmosphere at San Mamés Athletic Club is extraordinary as well. And then I would put a caveat, a little asterisk, and I would say the Bernabeu is not in there because I would put the atmosphere at Rayo Vallecano above that because it's more like real. But the asterisk by Real Madrid is when Real Madrid are trailing and need a goal in a big tie, usually a European tie. Yes. And so when they're 2-0 down and they've just scored a goal, that noise is ridiculous. And yes, that atmosphere then is actually quite unique because it's like this sort of tingling that goes around the stadium in terms of noise, but expectation as well. And yes, everybody kind of knows what's happening, but it's gonna keep happening. So yeah, that is really, it's a very specific thing, because if you just go to the Bernabeu on any given Sunday and watch any given La Liga game, it is not one of the best atmospheres in Spain in terms of the stadium. But if you are there on a big European night, they're trailing and they score to start a comeback, that's unique. That's incredible.
We agree on this completely. We're on the same page, because my theory is, I don't even know if it's a theory, I think it's pretty obvious that the Bernabeu is a lot of tourists. Not everyone there, like if you go to Vallecas, every single person sitting there is a diehard Rayo Vallecano fan. If you go to the Bernabeu, not every single person sitting there is a diehard Real Madrid fan. Or if they are, sometimes they're rich people who don't make too much noise, right?
Yeah.
The people who are like going to make noise are outside the stadium. They maybe can't afford to get in, or for whatever reason, not in there. So I completely agree with you. And it's funny, like the Metropolitano, we also agree on that. So I've been to the Metropolitano, I think, for three derbies now, and it's way better than the Bernabeu derby.
Yeah.
And Lucas, for the first time, came with me, I think just this season he was there, and he saw the intro and all the noise. He's like, man, we got to step our game up in the Bernabeu. It's not even close.
It's really not, man. You're right. Yeah.
If you were asked that question when you were still working for Real Madrid, would you kind of have metaphorical gun to your head that you would have to say Real first?
I mean, you know, it's not a good look, is it, to be working at Real Madrid TV and say that the Bernabeu isn't one of the best atmospheres. So yeah, well, probably.
Here's a perfect, oh wait, not this one. Oh shoot, you know what? I'll bring it up because I forgot to upload it. I'm just going to read it. I think it ties in nicely. So the question is from Vasco Tochevsky. He says, hey, Phil and Keon. Phil, how would you feel if you worked for Real Madrid TV at the moment and had to do the refereeing videos? Your general thoughts on them, maybe share a thought on the love for controversies in the Spanish media. Big salute to you and TSFP. Love your work.
I know the guys that do the videos at Real Madrid TV. I work with them. They're like my friends. I'm not a fan at all of the videos, and I don't think they serve much purpose really. But I tell you what, like they've been blown out of proportion, because Real Madrid TV have been doing these videos for a long time, and it's only recently started to get traction. And
yeah,
like with all due respect, like I used to work there. I loved my time there. Spent 9 years there. But it is, you know, factually, I think it certainly was when I was there. Maybe it's gone up, but it is literally the least watched channel in Spain in terms of viewing figures. It is the least watched channel. So these videos, they're only in the media and because people are talking about them. So the only way that a referee might come across, like referees aren't tuning into the Real Madrid news bulletin at 3 o'clock to watch, like that's, and you know, not a huge amount of people are across Spain. So this has become like a sort of media story rather than an actual story. So I don't think they're great, but you know, it's the Real Madrid editorial line and policy that they want to choose to follow. They are free to do so on their channel, but it's not something that I would have felt comfortable if I had to do that video. I wouldn't feel too comfortable doing it.
Luckily, I think it's, I mean, right, well, right now the English version of Real Madrid TV doesn't exist, right? It's only Spanish, I think.
The English version does still exist, I think, only just about hanging on there. Okay. If you think you can watch it on realmadrid.com, like if you go on the website and click on Real Madrid TV, I think there's an option to switch it to English, and there is still a small amount of content in English. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Okay. The glory days were when you and K and All those, yeah. Allison and all those guys.
Yeah, a lot of good, good people, you know, a lot of important people before me were there who have gone on to do big things. So yeah, yeah.
All successful, all doing big things everywhere. Yeah.
That's the thing, because Real Madrid TV was so good at that. You just did everything. You just learned how to, you were reporting, presenting, commentary, studio guest. You did some editing, you put videos, you did everything. And loads of people just took full advantage of that and learned a lot. And then went on to do other stuff. So, yeah.
So Kay Murray pops on here every now and then because she has a Real Madrid diary from her time there.
Yeah.
Just all these crazy stories. Yeah. Do you have anything like that, like documented or any crazy stories the way she has? Or what is it? Was it different kind of eras? Or?
She's got some crazier stories than me, I think. Just general life in Madrid. I mean, there's stuff that I probably shouldn't say. So let's leave that at that. There's stuff enough. That I probably shouldn't say.
Well, next time we talk, like I don't think I've seen you in person to talk to you, like have a conversation like that since before the pandemic.
Yeah, I would have been at the stadium, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the perks of you working for Real Madrid was I'd see you more.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Now
yeah,
you're
yeah,
in Barcelona in the studio often. So, but you're at the Bernabeu sometimes because I know that you tweet about it off to the Bernabeu.
I do. Like, I do.
You
know, yeah, yeah. I still try to go because, yeah, it's a good... good place to go and watch some football. So yeah,
how do you feel about like kind of the way the media is now and also with like social media and stuff, because when you guys started the landscape was completely different? Do you kind of like the direction it's headed now? Or
yeah, I mean, when we started the podcast in 2013, there weren't many podcasts and Twitter was around, but it was different.
Different is one way of putting it.
It was different, wasn't it? It was calmer as well. Yeah. It was a lot calmer and it didn't necessarily induce anxiety in people and it wasn't as aggressive. And I've certainly tried to just tone things down a bit as well on social media. Like,
I find not checking helps.
Yeah, like,
I post and get out of there. Like I try.
Yeah. And also just, you know, life is too short to be just arguing with strangers on the internet. Like I know a lot of people like to do that. That's fine. Go for it if you want to. But I'm just realized, hold on, I don't need to be doing this. So it's you know, we're just in an increasingly polarized world, full stop. So football is just another part of that, I think.
It's changing, but it's fun to reflect on the glory days. There's a fun one. Remarkable Bike on Discord says, I'd love to know what Phil thinks of Greek food versus Spanish food and what a first-time visitor to each country should definitely try. What are his top three dishes from each cuisine? Huge fan of the pod and Rincón Cultural episodes in particular, which is what inspired this question.
Wow. Good question, man. I mean, Greek food is just like infinitely superior to Spanish food. Just like so much better. It's just a different like shots universe, fired. Man. It's just like, come at me, Españoles. But this is just not something that you're going to win ever. I do like Spanish food. It's just not as good as I think the people in Spain think it is. But that's probably the same as every cuisine, right? So
everyone
cuisine,
has their biases.
Yeah, man. Everyone thinks that their food's the best. And, you know, it really isn't. Greek food, the top three dishes, I would say, you know, you've got to try moussaka, which is like this kind of think of it as a lasagna, but with aubergine instead of pasta. Maybe try spanakopita, which is like spinach and cheese pie, which is, you know, a personal favorite. And then you could go for something like maybe stifado, which is like a beef, slow cooked beef stew, which is pretty delicious as well. And like in Spain, try paella. Like I like paella. I don't eat seafood or shellfish, but there's loads of really good like meat paellas. I like cachopo, which is a thin veal steak covered in ham, then cheese, then breaded, then fried. It's extraordinarily unhealthy, but pretty delicious. And I like a good tortilla de patatas as well, like Spanish omelette. Nice and I like it quite runny and I like it with with cebolla, with onion. So yeah, there's you can tell, Kian, because that was just off the top of my head. Like, ask me for Real Madrid statistics, and I have to do some research. But in terms of food, I'm good to go, man. You don't need prior warning. So yeah.
Well, look. I mean, you always post your meals and what you're eating.
Yeah. You get to a certain age now, and you just stop arguing with people, and you're like, "Here's what I had for lunch." You know? this is what social media's become now. So yeah.
I mean, I'm a big fan when you find the cheap, like, you know, €2, €5 breakfast in a nice cafe, nice patio, sun is shining. Like, that's a vibe that, you know.
That's everywhere. Yeah, that's literally
except for North America. I don't know.
I mean, that's everywhere in Spain. Yeah. No. Go on. Okay. No, I'm from London, and every time I go, I just was there at the weekend, and it's just mind blowing. Yeah. It's kind of similar. So yeah. Spain's good value. Good value.
Yeah. I don't think your take on Greek food being better than Spanish food is controversial at all. I think that's
pretty common, man, but it is in Spain. Yeah.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. But yeah. I would.
I like Iranian food.
Oh.
Yeah. Could be there. Yes,
don't
please.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
It's that to me is the best.
Yeah.
But I would take Greek food over Spanish food any day of the week. Yeah. No, there's no question. Sin duda.
It's the correct answer. Yeah.
Yes. Quick super chats, and we got to wrap it up because I know we got to let you go. George. Oh, is this a Greek last name? Possibly.
Certainly is.
Charalambos.
Charalambos.
Okay.
Yorgos Charalambos.
He says, is Kitro Amarilista?
Όχι, φίλε. I'm not. No, I'm not. No, think of it like as when a footballer joins a football team and they don't necessarily support that football team, but they give their all for that football team while they were there. I do not support Real Madrid, but for the 9 years I was there, I gave my all in covering the team and trying to produce the content that Real Madrid fans wanted in the way that they would want. But no, I'm not a Madridista. No.
Well, can you reveal your team?
I support Rayo. I've got a Rayo Vallecano season ticket.
Like your childhood club.
Spurs. Yeah, Spurs. Yeah. Tottenham. Yeah, Tottenham fan. Had a season ticket there and then I moved. But yeah, no, big Spurs fan still. Yeah.
This is a loaded question, but we can do the quick short answer like in 30 seconds. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Johan Juarez says, is there a possibility that Rodrigo thrives with the arrival of Mbappe? People think it will hurt him, but will he thrive with less responsibility?
Yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it as well, thriving with less responsibility. He's actually really keen for Mbappe to come. And when you hear him speak about it, he's not like I think he wants Mbappe to come. I think they've got quite a good relationship. And he doesn't seem like he's nervous about Mbappe coming and him being displaced. It feels like he's quite up for it. They would have to rejig the starting 11 and the formation, I think, for Rodrigo and Mbappe and Vinicius and Bellingham to all play in that team. But it does feel like all four of them kind of have to play, because I think Rodrigo is an extraordinary talent that isn't just going to be, he can't just be like a super sub. I think you need to try and find a way to get him in that team. And whether it's him on the right, him potentially through the middle, him playing a little bit deeper, I'm not sure, but I think I hadn't thought of it like that he could feel like he might thrive with less responsibility, but that's there could be something in that. Obviously everyone here is trying to figure out, you know, how Real Madrid are going to play with Mbappe and where he's going to fit and where Vinny's going to go and where everyone else is going to go, because, you know, you take him and put him into this team and obviously he has to start every game, but it will require some kind of displacement and rejigging, and it's probably going to take a little while for it to work in terms of everyone else. Like he'll score, but in terms of everyone else and, you know, a little bit further back as well, it might just take a while. But yeah, no, interesting question.
Has this particular question or topic come up on Tactics Tuesday?
No, because we're not talking about players that aren't in La Liga yet. When he comes next season, I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot, or like, you know, the second it's official, then we will talk about it.
It's going to be a big topic.
If I just refer to him as, you know, the French guy who may or may not be coming, that's and everyone knows who I'm talking about. But
for the longest time, we would just call him the man who we shall not speak of,
because
he just broke our hearts too many times.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Real Madrid friends, and they're just, it's funny, isn't it? Like, football fans, we're so fickle, aren't we? Just, you know, like, oh, forget that guy. No, oh, yeah. Man, I don't want him to come. No, no, he's done this too many times. What?
Yeah.
Oh, what, he's coming, yeah? All right.
Yeah, he's already forgiven.
Yeah,
no question. All right, Phil. Thanks so much for spending some time with us on your day off. That should be noted. That's a huge thank you to you. I'm also adding Phil and TSFP's Twitter handles on the bottom there. Not that you need them because you probably already know them, but just in case there's any of you who don't follow Phil and the great work he does and TSFP does, the Spanish Football Podcast. These guys are the OGs, the pioneers, the inspiration for everyone who started a podcast after, including us. So thank you for your ongoing
That might be
services.
A new Twitter bio. These guys are the OGs. I like that.
The OGs. The OGs.
OGs of the Spanish football podcast game.
You are. Let it be known. You guys are the OGs. What's next? Am I going to see you at the Bernabeu anytime soon?
If you're coming for the Manchester City game, then...
Lucas will be there, not me. So you'll see Lucas. Yeah.
Well, I'll see you for the semis probably then.
I like the optimism. I like it.
Yeah, right.
All right, Phil. Thank you so much, man. Great chatting. And listeners, pleasure. Thanks for tuning in. If you join late, this will all be posted after the fact. You can go back and watch the whole thing. Thanks, Phil. Take care, buddy.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.